Hey everybody, before we get started with today's show, I wanted to give a shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a stress and mind-body coach based out of Los Angeles. You might remember the time that she guest hosted my podcast just a few weeks ago. She also was live with me back in August of 2021. In fact, one of the very few people that has ever actually seen the garage gym. Pretty awesome. Jeannie facilitates breath work to decrease stress, release stuck negative emotions, and decrease pain. Having trouble calming the monkey mind? She's definitely your gal. It's not about controlling or managing your stress or your thoughts. Instead, it's about shifting and improving the relationship that you have with them. Jeannie spent 16 years battling fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and a myriad of other chronic symptoms that left her physically and mentally exhausted. She healed herself completely and is obsessed with getting her clients fast results through her one-on-one coaching program. Receive instant access to her recorded breathwork mini session by visiting www.jeanniekolwin, that's JeannieKulwin.com to sign up. Welcome back. It is Wednesday, March the 2nd. I think this is my second Wednesday in a row, which is crazy because it's been so flip-flopped between Wednesday and Thursday, and I think there was even a couple of Fridays in there. Before we get started, though, I want to make sure that I gave a big shout-out to the patrons of the podcast. If you're interested in supporting the show monetarily, helping keep the lights on, go to patreon.com/ The Mind and Fitness Podcast. Let me give a shout out to Amanda and Elise, Enda, Dominic, Sasha, Sylvie, James, John, Brooke, Jason, Colette, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Michael, Anthony, Jen, and Nate, Christina, Ross, Julie, Brian, Arnie, and Barb. Thank you all so much for continuing to support the podcast. I'm eternally grateful to all of you for continuing to help keep this thing on the air and help keep this passion project running and continue helping people. So today's interview is killer. It's Lisa Schlossberg, who she's been on other podcasts before, so her name may not be foreign to you. But I said this in the podcast, and the more time that is separated from actually having the interview to now, the more that it's just crazy that when I first started this podcast in this summer or fall, I guess it was the early fall, just like a week after summer ended, 2017, the entire idea of this whole thing was to have it be basically what Lisa Schlossberg does right now. So we get into that throughout the interview. I think that you're going to absolutely love it. If you're interested in checking her out, you can go to outofthecave.health. But all of those links will be in the show notes. You can check them out there, of course. My vacation is a week and a half away. I can't wait. It's like the first, like, legit, we're flying somewhere as a family. We're going to Disneyland. It's going to be awesome, and I cannot wait for some warmer weather. I'm going to rent. I'm still got it narrowed down, but I'm going to rent a badass motorcycle on that particular trip, and I just couldn't be more excited. So without further ado, here's Lisa. I think you're going to love this interview. I really do. So have a great rest of the week, and here's Lisa and I. Okay, so I'm very excited, and the reason that I am so excited is that for those of you that have been around for a long time listening to the show, so it started about 5 years ago, and the original name was the Eddie Knows Fitness Podcast. And for those who even go further back, know that I have a history with weight loss, and that was sort of the origination of this entire idea of a podcast, which evolved into a TMS podcast. But I have Lisa Schlossberg on the line right now, who we're going to talk a lot about holistic weight loss and things like that. But you've probably heard her name if you listen to any of the other shows in this space. So Lisa, are you there?
Hello. Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thanks so much for being here. I got an email from you in January. I'm not like a fangirl, but I was stoked because I recognized the name because I'd heard you talk before on Nicole's show. And I followed you on Instagram for a few years now. But tell us about you, Lisa Schlossberg. What do you do now? And then we'll go backwards a little bit. But What's your thing now? What are you doing now?
Right. I totally hear you. So I am working with emotional eaters, anyone who's struggling with their relationship with food. So I like to say it's, you know, if you are struggling in your relationship with food, it's really not a food issue. It's more about, you know, coping with the emotions and the underlying root issue. So whether it's overeating, undereating, mindless eating, stress eating, emotional eating, whatever kind of eating issue it is, that's what I do and that's who I'm working with.
Now, for people that have issues with emotional eating, I would make the argument that that is probably like 99% of us or so.
Yes.
That it's a large portion of us. I'm curious though, because, you know, it's it, so you have like a formal training background as an LMSW, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So talk about that. Like, did you, when you went to school to do that, like, was the intent to, if you were to go back 10 or 15 years and you were to think about, okay, I'm going to go to school to be this thing. Was that thing what we have as today, 2022, as what you're doing?
It's a great question because the answer is a quick and hard, absolutely no, not at all. I will answer that question, but I think the best way to do so is like back up a few years before to how I even got to that point.
Yeah.
Because I graduated from college in 2015. And during my sophomore year of college is when I lost 150 pounds. So I know, you know, we'll get to that. But after my weight loss, I knew that I wanted to help people and I knew that I knew a lot about fitness. And so I became a personal trainer. I had really no idea what I wanted to do or how I wanted to use my experience or my knowledge or any of that. So I became a trainer. I graduated from college. My major, by the way, was international studies. So I had no idea. I just wanted to travel the world and like live a cool life. And so I started working in the gym after I came home from the University of Michigan. I was living in New York and I full time was a personal trainer. So I lived in the gym really for like 2 years. At that time, I worked at GNC when it was still like a huge corporation. And I lived that life of, you know, fitness and exercise and supplements and food. And that was kind of my life for a while. And then something interesting was happening while I was working with people at the gym when I realized that really the conversations that I wanted to have were about deeper things. It was not really, you know, because I could be working with someone and give them the quote unquote perfect exercise plan, but then the blocks that were coming up for people were really mental and emotional and spiritual and social. And I was getting really interested in the human being beyond the body and the physical, you know, state. So that led me to, I became a holistic health coach. I went through the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, also known as IIN. And that kind of came first. And it also helped me expand my understanding of the human being through really a holistic lens. And now it wasn't all physical. It wasn't all about the food and exercise, but it was really about your lifestyle and your mindset and the inner dialogue and your emotional capacity and all of those different things. And so I was kind of like piecing these things together. I started calling myself a holistic personal trainer at the time. And just to give you like an idea of what that looked like, I started training people in my home eventually. And I was starting to combine things like working out with a meditation or working out and then a visualization. Like I was trying to kind of expand the experience so that it was more mind, body, soul at that point. And then ultimately, I decided to get my master's in social work because it became really clear to me that when it comes to the relationship with food, especially, if I didn't have the tools and the skills and the education to really help people with the mental emotional part of it, it was really like it was a process of putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound for anyone who is really struggling with food and eating the way that I had in my life. So that's why for me, I never intended to really be like a therapist as much as I wanted the training to be a therapist so that I could really use it holistically and start treating people as, you know, humans.
So I genuinely think that all the stuff that you were
saying and sort of why you ended up where you have ended up and kind of the nature behind being somebody that is a personal trainer and that is it, and then going the step further to kind of have a deeper understanding behind it. Like, that's the, I don't even know the best words to really put it in, but I see it really as like the secret sauce. Like, that's, yes, that's the whole, that is the whole, like, capital T truth, as Nicole would say, but the essence behind the Mind and Fitness podcast. Like, that's right, the whole idea,
right?
Is that one thing I'm curious about, because when I had quit my full-time software job years ago and had said, okay, I'm basically going to be a Lisa Schlossberg knockoff without even knowing who you were or are, because that was the whole idea, was that this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be a trainer, but I'm going to base it in this much more of an emotional approach.
Yeah.
It was really, at least for the fitness minded people that I know, that was a tough thing for them to grasp onto. And I think that because the if you follow like a typical fitness influencer on Instagram or any of the social platforms, a lot of the way to which they, at least the way that they put the message out there, it's just very much of a, you work hard, you eat less calories, and really that's kind of it. And right, like before we started rolling, I told you that this would have been in 2002. I weighed close to 200 and I was 235, 240 at about 5'6 or 5'7. So I was like, I was pretty out of shape. And I remember I went on this road trip with my family for about 6 weeks to Oklahoma, and we live in Seattle, and you're in Irvine. Is that right?
I was. I'm in San Diego now.
Okay. Well, regardless, you're on the best coast. That's all I can say. So, so we did this 6 week trip, and I ate terribly for that. Put on a lot of weight during that trip, and I was, you know, I was 16 or 17 years old, and like, I just felt like I feel super slow. I don't feel that confident when I'm, you know, I'm like, if I want to have a girlfriend, the girls aren't looking at me, like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I went, and at the time, like Weight Watchers was hot, and it was easy to use. Because it was you figure out what the calories and the fat and the protein are, and then you have the points, and then you have a certain allotment of points. And let's just say, for conversation's sake, that mine was like 25 in a day. So I would have maybe 20 or 21 in a day, right? So I'm having a little bit of a caloric restriction, and I'm mm-hmm. seeing 4 or 5 pounds per week come off. And then it's like, okay, well, 20 worked well, so how about we say what 15 will do, mm-hmm. or 12 or 13 will do. And so getting lower and lower and lower. And then eventually, over the course of, I don't know, 3 months of doing this or 4 months of doing this, I had lost about 40 or so pounds, but I was stuck there. And my body was exhausted. I went from working out never to working out 7 days per week and following this really, really strict Weight Watchers program, which a lot of the literature was strictly just eat less and follow this point system. And that's really all that there was. But I really felt just, I don't know, exhausted, broken. It just didn't, like, my body just, I did not have the energy to go and work out and do any of that stuff. So I stopped working out. I stopped following Weight Watchers. I was like sort of pseudo watching what I was eating, but I just kind of didn't really pay much attention to it and just kind of went off living my life. And I knew I had this newfound confidence, maybe from losing 40 pounds, whatever the case is. But then that weight just started to really fall off. And then I had lost 100 pounds. So I lost another 60 pounds in 3 months. So I lost more weight in less time doing physically less and dieting less. Mm-hmm. And I never really thought much of that until I started looking into like the Sarno stuff, where I was just thinking, huh, like what was happening there? Maybe paying less attention to it and less focus on this one thing maybe did a lot more good for me. And so that's something that I think about when you talk about this approach that you have. People that are into that traditional caloric restriction, you know, typical Instagram influencer, right, fitness type person, like, do they think you're full of shit? Or like, do they seem to get it, but maybe they don't think that their followers will get it, so they just don't talk about it? Like, kind of talk about that.
Yeah. First of all, thank you for sharing that. I so appreciate all of this. I mean, I love this question because you're in this world of fitness. So you know, you get it. You can imagine what it was like. So sometimes I share the story of like when I was a personal trainer and I was working at the gym, there came a point where I had to really get real with myself that I was trying really hard to teach and share something that people just were not interested in. And also were not, that wasn't my job. Like, I was coming in being like, all right, your childhood trauma has something to do with this issue. And they were like, I'm paying you to be my personal trainer. Like, that's not like, you know, so I had to just like be really honest with myself that I did need to do something like go to school for social work, because I needed to be, you know, talking to people who wanted to hear what I had to say, at least. So part of it was like really just drawing the line between, and I'm sure you've experienced this like countless times at this point, sharing this message. It's like some people just aren't open to it. Some people aren't ready for it. Some people don't want to hear it. And I had to just watch my own really like codependent tendency to like come in and be like, I know everything, listen to me. So part of it was just being aware of that, finding the right people, right? Some people are open, some people are not. And that's the way of it. And that's okay. And so having said that, I had the experience very often when I started calling myself a holistic personal trainer. And I would talk about, you know, combining like talk therapy and personal training. That's the way I would explain it at the time. And I had a lot of feedback that was like, that's not a thing. And I was like, well, that's kind of the point. It's like, I know it's not really a thing, but I think that it should be. And I just kept repeating kind of quotes in my head about, you know, like, this is what I'm here to create if it doesn't already exist. So the resistance was hard for a little bit because people were kind of like, you know, it didn't fit into a box that people were expecting or familiar with. So there's, you know, there's always resistance to a new approach, a new idea, especially if it challenges what people are already familiar with and used to. But having said all of that, I think it goes back to some people are open and some people aren't. And I think ultimately, especially because like I'm familiar with a lot of how disordered eating works, and a lot of that comes down to control, right? And like wanting control, feeling safe with a semblance of control or a perception of safety with control, all of that stuff. And so I think when people are really resistant to a mind-body approach, I can really, really relate to this. That is, I would rather feel like I have total control. And so I don't want to hear something like that. Like, I don't want to hear about emotions. I don't want to hear about mental health. I don't want to hear about all of those things that I can't see, touch, measure, track, and weigh, because that's where I feel safe and that's where I feel comfortable. So I think in general, it's kind of like anything else. There are people who are really open to hearing it and who say, you know, wow, like that makes so much sense. When I say things like we can't solve an emotional problem with a physical solution, or like I said earlier, if the biggest problem that you have with food is that you're an emotional eater, it's not a problem you have with food. It's a question about how you cope with your emotions.
Yeah.
So I'm saying the same thing, right? I'm the common denominator there. Some people hear that and they're like, oh my God, you're absolutely right. That makes so much sense out of the last, you know, 40 years of struggling with food. And then there are some people who hear that and are like, no, I don't think so. And it's like, okay, you know, so it really just depends where people are at. And it totally goes both ways, always.
You know, the thing that there were a lot of bad things about the show The Biggest Loser. However, if people really sat down and paid attention to, because it definitely had its negative points. But one thing that I kept coming back to that I thought a lot about, especially when it was in its heyday and it was one of the highest rated shows on TV, is that the people that had the most success had these, like, they sort of danced, you know, Jillian and Bob especially, they'd really like, they'd kind of dance around this, but it wouldn't become this centralized focal point of the show. And I felt like maybe they didn't go far enough into these people have these like childhood trauma related issues, or maybe they have some kind of deeper psychological types of issues or emotional issues that really need to be delved into. And that's really like the basis of it. But I felt like it was focusing far too much on like what the outcome was, which was sitting down and overeating or doing whatever. Right. When really like the way to solve the problem is to address the original issues. And I kind of feel like if the segment about somebody was 10 minutes, they would spend 45 seconds or a minute on that background issue. And then the rest was like, go, sprint, run on the treadmill, do all this kind of stuff. But I felt like they were really getting there. So it's kind of been kind of in the peripheral
for the last several years, just with the fact that you've been doing this for a while? I mean, you had said you went to school in 2015. Is that right?
Yeah.
So in the last 7 years, how has, I guess, maybe how you see the acceptance of this kind of stuff where, hey, eating is a, like overeating and weight gain, the majority of the time is a emotionally rooted issue. Has that tone changed in the last 7 years, just in terms of how you see people accepting that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think it's really interesting when it comes to the culture right now, because I would say, you know, I'm someone who I'm in the TMS chronic pain community, and I also am in the food and eating like world. And what I think is really interesting is that in the TMS chronic pain world, I think there has been, in my experience anyway, it's just becoming like more and more kind of quote unquote mainstream. We have some, you know, we have a really long way to go, but I think it's just growing. And, you know, with the help of people like Nicole Sachs, who are so real, down to earth, relatable, spreading a message that is so alternative and different, I think my experience again is that I've seen it just kind of grow. And that's incredible. And then what's really interesting for me is that in the world of food and eating and body image, there has been such a cultural shift and movement and divide. And there's so much going on there for me. Meaning, you know, a lot of us are very familiar with the what we'll call diet culture and diet industry. And we could say, you know, The Biggest Loser is kind of part of that, a representation of that. And then over, I would say, especially the last 5 to 10 years, there has been this blooming and blossoming of the anti-diet movement and culture. So we have the intuitive eating movement, we have the body positivity movement, the health at every size movement. There's a lot kind of fighting against the diet culture and the diet world that we live in. And the theory there is that there is no healthy or sustainable way to lose weight and keep it off, so we shouldn't even try, and the diet industry is the problem. And I will state a personal opinion that is, the diet industry is not the answer, and that didn't work out. And also the anti-diet industry, to me personally, is not the answer, and that's not working out. And so what I really try to do, and what, you know, my coaching and my curriculum and all the work that I do is about, is really that middle ground where you're not listening to the diet industry, you're not listening to the anti-diet industry, but you're really coming back home to yourself, and you're making the connection with your own mind-body system, and you're learning how to have some control, but not total control, because that's just the way it works. So I say all of that because it really, again, feels very deeply like it depends who you're talking to, because there are some people who see that, you know, I have a weight loss story and that I'm talking about food and eating, and they say I am a poster child of the diet industry, and, you know, that I'm promoting eating disorders. Like it gets really, really, really polarized in the culture that exists right now. My message and my work and myself, get misinterpreted, especially on the internet and social media constantly, because people see that it's about weight loss and kind of assume that that's related to the diet industry. But it just, you know, the way that I have to teach it and talk about it is the weight loss, like you were just saying, was really the result. It was the aftermath. It was the consequence of doing the deeper work and doing the mind-body healing that, you know, you and I know about. So it depends. It depends. But I would say overall, there is much more awareness, and it's becoming more and more accepted to do the deeper emotional component of it.
You know, I'm glad that you said that. So there is a... You may not know anything I'm about to say or ever heard of this guy or whatever, but there was a guy on YouTube that he has a pretty big following. I think he's probably got, I don't know, a million or a couple million subscribers, but Obese to Beast is the name.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was following John on, I bet he had 100 subscribers when I first found him. And I'd been following him since 2014 or maybe 2013 on YouTube, because he reminded me a lot of myself when I was trying to lose weight, and he worked at Starbucks, and he would get up at 3 in the morning and he'd go on his shift, and he liked fitness and he liked skateboarding, and he lived in San Diego and I think still lives in San Diego. So he's even local to you. But a lot of his videos and his content now relate around, and he gets a lot of shit for this. And I'd be curious on your take, but body positivity I think is great. However, there are plenty of influencers and people out there who are body positivity in, I think, maybe going a little bit too far. And so they do, they have really destruction, what's the word I'm looking for? Almost like destruction focused habits where they're taking body positivity to the nth degree and they're saying, I'm going to eat everything I want and become very overweight. And they say that that is okay because I have body positivity and that's what they focus on. So he gives some commentary on this that, well, that's sort of a, that's a complete 180 from maybe what was hot and popular 10 years ago. And so now you have this whole other problem. And to me, I think there's still, from the Sarno book, I think there's still a large component of repression that is happening, because it's almost like you're still having a control issue, but your control mechanism is having no control. Does that make sense?
It makes like an abundant amount of sense to me. I hear exactly what you're saying. And I mean, we could, oh my God, there's so much to say here. Anyone who works with me and who's listening to this is just like nodding their head, like eating the popcorn, like here she goes. because this is really a loaded conversation. There's a lot to say, but, I hear you. I agree with you completely. I think, you know, the thing with body positivity is like you said, it's great. It's great that we are feeling positive about all shapes and sizes. That is really important. And to me, like I will even say, you know, if you want to, and it feels good to you to pay no attention to what you're eating, like, and I say this with no judgment, like if it feels really good to you to not pay attention to what you're eating, eat whatever you feel like, and be 100 pounds overweight and feel positive about that, then honestly, like, that's great. Like, who am I to say that that's not going to work for you? That's totally awesome and fine. But where it starts to get sticky and tricky for me is the complete lack of boundaries that exist in this world, so that one person who wants to lose weight is being attacked for wanting to lose weight by people who are saying you should be body positive.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, well, listen, if you in your body at your weight in your shape and size are feeling good, then that's great for you and I'm happy for you. But if I'm not comfortable in my body and shape and size and I would like to do something about it, then that's up to me and that's my life and my body and my world. And you don't really get to say anything about that. And so I think where, you know, especially on social media, like, oh my God, there's no good way to have this conversation. There's no way to show up and say anything without someone picking a problem with it or having an issue with it. So I think that is the biggest issue that I see, is that, you know, I compare it in the work that I do to like when you have people with different belief systems, different religions, different ideologies about, and different politics even. I mean, that gets tricky, but like the idea that we can have different beliefs and we can leave each other alone to believe what we believe and do what we want to do. And if one person wants to be 500 pounds and eat whatever they want and not pay attention to that, and that feels good, then great. Let them live their life. Like, that's fine. But if I, again, want to do something about that for me, because it doesn't feel good to me, because I, Lisa Schlossberg, have been over 300 pounds in my life and I know what that feels like and I don't want to do that again, then you don't get to tell me that's a problem.
Yeah.
You don't get to tell me that's unhealthy or disordered, because again, kind of like what you were saying earlier, Eddie, you know what it feels like to like have trouble walking up a flight of stairs. Right. You know what it feels like to live in a body where you feel limited because of your size. And then the question becomes, you know, how do we do it in a healthy way? And we can talk about that. But I think the problem more than anything is not the movements and the beliefs and the ideologies. It is the complete lack of boundaries around that and letting people just be free to do what feels good and feels aligned for them in their lifestyle. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. and I know that it is a, I mean, it's a fine line topic because on, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, I think people could have really benefited a lot from a body positivity, at least what right. I was out there observing. But I think in a lot of ways, maybe it's go. And I think that the, if you, that whole, the vernacular around, if you feel good about being 300 or 400, 500 pounds or whatever, then that's great if you feel good. But if you right. are the trusted advisor, the therapist or whatever, I mean, can you push on somebody a little bit and say, do you actually feel good or are you saying that you feel good? Right. Is that like, because you could find people yeah. that have, like, I talk to people all the time that they have enormous pain issues that have lasted years and years. Like my brother, great example, always has some kind of an ailment, some kind of a health ailment. And if his spouse has starts having like a heart arrhythmia or a heart murmur or whatever, and I say, like I had said something along the lines of like, well, like maybe there's like some anxiety there. I'm not saying that's what it is, but have you considered that, pushing a little bit? And the immediate, the clap back is like, well, you know, life hasn't been as stressful now. And again, I would love to be able to push a little bit on that and say, well, they work in healthcare, they're immunocompromised, they're all this. Is it really all that calm right now? So I would challenge somebody if they are 500 pounds and they say that they feel that everything is going great and it's all peachy and whatever. Well, if your back has been killing you for 10 years, I don't think that everything is going great in your emotional world. As much as you want to tell me that it is, I don't think it is.
Right. I totally hear you. It's a great question. And I feel like it's funny because I can hear like myself as a personal trainer, I would have like asked this exact question. That's like, okay, but then how do you like do something about that? Or like, how do you continue that? How do you, you know, deepen the conversation there? Because it really, you know, is not always that simple. And I think the reason I appreciate this question so much is because now we're really getting into like the real, you know, what Nicole would call the capital T truth. That is, nothing is all good or all bad or all right or all wrong, or it, you know, it, we're not black and white, especially when we're talking about the mind body system. So the reason I say that is because so I'll talk about the ACE study just for a moment. Yeah. Are you familiar with the ACE study?
Oh yeah. I did a whole, yeah, I've done whole episodes on it. Yes.
Okay. Figured. So the reason we're talking about the ACE study is because the origin. Okay. So the ACE study, the Adverse Childhood Experience study, is basically the groundbreaking research that showed us really that, you know, 9 out of 10 physical health issues are actually rooted in mental, emotional trauma, stress, toxic stress, et cetera. So the reason that's a really big deal, especially in the work that I do, is because the origin of the ACE study was weight and weight gain and weight loss. I'm not sure, you know, if you've talked about that, but the whole thing began with Vincent Felitti at Kaiser Permanente working in a weight loss clinic and working with people who were 200, 300, 400, 500 pounds overweight. And what he started, the reason, again, it was the birth of the ACE study, was because it was his interviews with those patients that started to really open his eyes to the fact that there was something deeper going on. And the reason that these people were 400 or 500 pounds was actually because they had a history of abuse or neglect, especially sexual abuse. And so this was the origin of the ACE study. So this is like, we know that food and eating, weight, dieting, obesity, all of it works the same way as every other addiction, as chronic pain, as all of it. It's just a place for that repressed energy to go.
And so to make sure, yeah, I'm clearing this up for anybody that's confused, that would be, my backache is your overeating. Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. So having said all of that, the reason that I love this and I'm starting there is because, well, now if we take that information and we integrate that into the conversation, what that means is that on one hand, the body is, let's say, 500 pounds or so, you know, the body is overweight, quote unquote, morbidly obese, according to the BMI chart in the medical model. And so what we would say is, like, to your point, Eddie, it's like, do you feel good? Like, do you really feel good there? Does your body feel good? And I will speak for myself as someone who's been over 300 pounds. Like, on one hand, you know, no. The answer to that was no, it didn't feel good because I couldn't fit in the roller coaster that I waited 4 hours online to ride. I couldn't close the seatbelt on the airplane or in my friend's car, or like, no, it honestly did not feel good in my body at that size. And it was limiting and it was challenging and it was hard. And also, now that I know all that I know about this, I understand that it's not really as simple as saying, does it feel good or not? Because there were many reasons, like I just listed, that it didn't feel good. But then we have to start asking the question that is, well, why is it there? Like, what was the root of it? The same way, right? Like, your back pain doesn't feel good, but part of your brain is like, oh yeah, oh yes, back pain, yeah. Right? Like, it does, quote unquote, feel good. It feels safe. And so I'll tell you a story of just someone I worked with a few years ago. And he said he was someone who he lost about 130 pounds and then gained it all back plus some. And he was considering getting surgery. And when I was talking to him about it, and I kind of, like, to your point, I was trying to just open up the conversation. And I said to him, how do you feel having this weight back on your body? And he really spoke to the duality of this, because he was saying, you know, at first he was like, it feels awful. I feel tired and sluggish and lethargic and defeated and angry. Like, it feels awful. And then I said, well, what are some of the good things about having all this weight on your body? And at first, right, that answer is like, good things. There's nothing good about it. I hate this. Yeah. And I really wish I didn't gain it back, right? The same as chronic pain. It's like, there's nothing good about it. I want it gone. And then I said, right, if we just consider that maybe there are some good things, what would those be? And then he really slowed down and he said, you know, people really don't mess with me as much. And I said, so, like, that sounds like protection. That sounds like safety. And he was like, well, I actually have a lot of issues around protection and safety because I was adopted. And then it really, again, opened up that conversation that was, so if there is some deeper stuff going on there, that is, there is some stress, some trauma, some undealt with just emotion from the life that you've lived, then, right, we can't solve an emotional problem with the physical solution. We can't just go on a diet, get the weight off. We can't just go get surgery and get the weight off and pretend that that's going to be the solution to it. So I'm saying all of this because we're really conditioned to believe that if someone is in a bigger body, that they're not happy. But the truth is, they might, you know, it might not feel great when you can't fit into the chair or the seatbelt or the clothing, but it does feel safe. It can feel safe to stuff everything down and not deal with it emotionally. Again, yeah. Speaking for myself and my own experience, it can feel protective and comforting to have an extra 150 pounds on your body because it feels like a guard. I mean, again, I'll speak for myself. When I lost 150 pounds, it was terrifying because I felt, the way I describe it is, I felt naked. I felt like I was walking through the streets naked because 150 pounds came off my body. And so I think unless you've ever been in a really big body, you can't get that. You know, if your safety and protection and comfort has never come from obesity, then it's hard to understand. But that's the truth of it. So it's not really about, are you happy? It's more about, how are you feeling safe? And to really come at it with that utmost compassion and curiosity about, you know, we could start to look at what are some of the consequences of you finding safety this way, right? So that would be, if your safety is coming from being obese or from being in a bigger body, we're not shaming that, we're not judging that, and we're not blaming that. We're not criticizing that, but we can really gently and compassionately look at what are some of the side effects to that. That is, you know, if food and eating is the way that you find comfort, well, part of the side effect to that is your back has been hurting for the last 10 years. So again, it's about really removing the shame, removing the judgment, and just really lovingly having that conversation that is, I really see that this is where you feel safe. And there are some side effects to you finding safety in this way. So how do we, very much like the chronic pain, right? How do we start to insource safety? How do we get you feeling safe and grounded in your body as it is so that you can start releasing the need for the weight? It's not releasing the weight that we need to focus on. It's releasing the need for it. It's releasing the reliance and the dependence upon it. And again, this is where it's very much just like any other addiction. Does that all make sense?
it does. One thing I'd love for you to comment about and talk about a little bit is, so there's a big difference of, let's say we have two people, both are quote unquote overweight, which definition of that is tough because like, right. Dwayne The Rock Johnson is like a 33 on the BMI scale. And if he died of COVID today, his comorbidity would be obesity. But we all look at that man and we know you're beautiful and it's not.
Right.
So who knows? But to me, there's a large difference between somebody that comes home and they get an ice cream cake on their way home and they stop at McDonald's and they get six cheeseburgers and all this kind of stuff. But then there's this whole other segment of people that, you know, they exercise a lot. They do watch what they eat. Those pounds will not come off. They also will look overweight. And sometimes these people may not even look all that different on the outside in terms of that. Now, to me, an element that maybe gets underscored a little bit that people that are in the latter camp where, you know, they do exercise, they do quote the right things, but that the weight will not come off. Because again, their extra weight that they're carrying is the equivalent of somebody else's ankle hurting or knee pain or chronic back pain or whatever. Because we know that in fight or flight, which is like kind of the basis and the nucleus of TMS and mind-body syndrome, is that there is certainly an element of like how much actual, like the processing of food, what's your metabolism doing on the inside? How, you know, what's your even ability to even burn off, like have caloric energy be burned off? Because, you know, your body's preparing to have a fight. So it's not really necessarily, the nervous system's not really prepping itself to lose any sort of weight. How would you deal with the latter? How would you work with the latter? Like what happens when you can get them to more of a place of equilibrium? Like I'm looking at your chart right now between weight and health. And on the health side, I'm imagining this person in this camp where stress levels are high. They do have, you know, they are stuck in fight or flight. And, but physically, you know, they're doing the things that should lead them to weight loss, but it's not.
Right.
So how do you work with that person? How is that different?
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting because what you're pointing to is the fact that, and this is really important in the conversation around food and eating, is that we are, as humans, we are physical and we are emotional and, you know, mental. So there's part of us that is tangible in the physical dimension. And then there's part of us that is mental, emotional, and the energy, let's say, that is within us, the electricity that makes our nervous system run and the synapses fire and all of that stuff. So I say that because we have to kind of shout out that there are a lot of factors at play. Like when it comes to food and eating, we do have to eat food every day, you know? So it's a little bit different than just what I'll call like regular TMS, because with something like TMS, it's like, right, if you have a back thing, it can be fairly simple, not easy, but fairly simple to like reject the medical model and just say, okay, I'm not going back to the doctor for this. I'm not going to get surgery on this. You know, I'm rejecting the medical model and really not thinking physically. And like, you know, you said this in your podcast when you were going through Sarno's reminders of like, you always have to think psychologically, not physically, just point blank. That is the truth. And so it's a little bit more difficult when it comes to food and eating because we have to eat food and we have to consider food and we have to consider, you know, exercise and movement and metabolism and genetics and all of the things that are actually at play. So I think it's important to also just say that when it comes to considering the physical dimension and the realities and the limitations of the physical dimension, there is something to be said for like genetics, for example, right? Like two people with different bone structures and genetics are going to have different bodies. And at a certain point, it's not about wanting to lose weight. There is an element of accepting that your body is going to be a certain body because that's your body, like as it exists, you know? So there's like those components to just kind of like shout out that is you can't, like I cannot get my body to look like Beyonce. That's just not going to happen in a healthy way. And it's not going to be sustainable. So there's an element of accepting what is true for you based on where you come from and what your body, you know, is going to look like. Having said that, I think the other thing that comes up for me when I hear this is the people that I work with, especially who are quote unquote doing all the right things, there's also an element, and again, this is just based on my experience and the people that I work with, that is when you're doing quote unquote all the right things in the physical dimension, it requires that we really double check that and really look at that. Because very often what I find is that those people who are quote unquote doing everything right are doing actually what their doctor told them to do, but actually is not quote unquote right. And what I mean by that is when I'm working with someone, for example, who is over 300 pounds and eating 1200 calories a day, because that's how I'm supposed to lose weight, that's not actually doing the right thing, right? So there's an element, again, of really getting clear on, are you eating enough? Are you not eating too much? Like, there really is a lot to navigate there. And especially the people that have internalized the diet culture and the diet industry so much, there is, in my experience, an epidemic of people under eating and being underfed and under malnourished, or undernourished. And that is really a huge issue when it comes to something like weight loss. So I just have to shout out like those things that need to be cleared up. But when it comes to the person that, you know, really is doing the quote unquote right things, eating in a gentle, let's say, caloric deficit kind of thing, doing regular movement, but not overtraining. And we have to find that balance there. Then it becomes really a question of the mind body work for me. It's what is going on emotionally? How are you coping with the accumulated stress? You know, are you using a skill or a tool like journal speak? What does your support system look like? Really opening up again the conversation so that it's not all physical. Because very often, especially again with the people who are doing all the right things, it's like, okay, I know exactly how much to eat. I'm counting every single calorie I eat. I'm counting every step I take. I'm counting, I'm tracking, I'm measuring, I'm portioning, I'm weighing. And that can cause a lot of stress and send us into fight or flight. So it really is this really gentle balance of looking at the physical, because the physical component is at play, while also balancing that out with your mental and emotional state. Because, you know, as far as the research says, if we're on a diet and we're in that kind of extreme mentality about it, that itself is going to raise the cortisol level. That itself is going to send us into fight or flight. So what I'm saying is, largely, we do have to be doing the physical things, and we have to make sure that we're doing the physical things with an energy that is safe and loving. And that is the most important component always.
You know, one thing it makes me think of, and it's deviating a little bit, we don't have to spend a lot of time here, but I used to do consulting for this company called Eat to Perform, and mm-hmm. I did a testimonial for them. And if anybody's curious, you can pop it in your Google machine and type Eddie Lindenstein, Eat to Perform. And I've got a written testimonial on there, because when I had first found them, one of my key struggles is that I was like 135 or so pounds, and looked incredibly skinny, didn't eat any carbs. I was ketogenic, but like low fat ketogenic, which, like, I would work out, and I had a lot of like injury issues that would keep popping up, and I'd have like a lot of shoulder issues, and I'd have a lot of bicep issues and stuff like that. And, but overall, I wasn't able to lift or perform the way that I want. So I found this company, and they helped me get away from 1200 or 1300 calories a day, mainly just from a performance aspect. And so I started understanding, okay, a caloric calculator, because you had said, are you eating enough?
Right.
A caloric calculator based on what I was doing just in my daily life. And I found TDEE calculators, which now that number went from 1200 or 1250 or whatever the prescription for me was based on height and weight, and that was it. But now when I'm actually looking, like, what's my total daily energy expenditure for all the things that I do, that number should have really been around like 2400 to 2800,
right,
based on the things that I was doing. And suddenly I bumped the calories way up. I didn't see a ton of weight gain. At least I didn't look all that different, but my performance shot through the roof. My injuries went way down.
Right.
And overall, I was just much happier with it overall. And then they brought me in as a consultant. So I would start working with their clients, and I would have a lot of these people that would come to me with what I was just telling you, feel like I'm doing all the right things. I'm working out five times a week. I do this, this, and that. And I was the only coach that was in there that did what the doctor that started getting me towards an emotional base of, hey, you have all these chronic health issues. Have you thought about the emotional world? When they, and this predates me knowing anything about Sarno, but I talked to somebody, they would tell me they're eating 12 or 1300 calories or whatever. So I talked to them about caloric impact. So they bumped that up a little bit, still weren't necessarily seeing the results that they wanted. And I would always say, okay, like, tell me about your job. Tell me about your family. Tell me about your life. Tell me about this, this, and that. And I would say, like, well, this is, there's a lot going on here. So maybe 5 days per week or even 4 days per week of intense strenuous exercise is not right for your lifestyle right now. It's exactly. It's taking too much out of you.
Yeah.
And so they might peel it back to three and take a couple extra walks or do two and then do yoga right. and do some walks, things like that. And then you would start to see
right.
the recovery go way up, the weight yep. go down. So I knew there was something there. And that sounds like it's a lot of what you're talking about too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that like that point is so important. That is, I was just saying this to someone yesterday, like we could talk about, okay, this is a good probably place to do this because this is a mind and fitness podcast, that I was talking about this fact that is we are physical and we are emotional. And so when it comes to being a human being, there's physical stress, like working out, and there's mental emotional stress. And that's not stress in a bad way. That's just stress in a factual way. So when we do something like, you know, run or lift or something, we're putting our body through stress. And that's great because that's how our body gets stronger. And that is how our body adapts. And that's really healthy for the body. But I'm saying this because we have to really pay attention and just be honest about the fact that we are both. And we like to, again, going back to having total control or the perception of total control, we like to act like we're just physical. And we like to think about, I'm doing the workouts, I'm getting the food, like it should be happening because I am physical.
Yeah.
But we're not considering the fact that there's also mental, emotional stress that's taking a toll on your body and your mind-body system. So what I was sharing with someone yesterday is like, when we have this conversation about being intimidated going to the gym, right? Let's say you're, you know, especially for women, like if you feel intimidated or scared or out of your comfort zone when you're first going to a gym, let's say. And I said this to someone, like, I really believe that there's something to be said for like, if your goal, let's say the first week that you're re-entering a gym, that your goal is just go. Like you don't have to lift anything. You don't have to do anything. Like if you walk into the gym and you walk on the treadmill, let's say for 20 minutes, like three times. And the reason I'm saying this and almost putting that limit on it, like you're not allowed to do more than that yet. Because if you again, especially struggle with intimidation in the gym, if you walk into the gym and you stand on the treadmill, you walk on the treadmill for 20 minutes, what's going to happen is that mental emotional stress is going to be able to come up so that you can start to pay attention to the thoughts that are going through your head about, you know, I don't know how to use this machine. And how does this work? How do I turn that on? How do I adjust this?
Yeah.
Where's the bathroom? I don't know where the water fountain is. Like, where's the front desk again? Like all the human things that are going through your head because you're in an unfamiliar new environment. And then, you know, you let that mental, emotional part of you just breathe, just exist, just have a voice, just have a place in your life. And then imagine, right, you can feel into what happens after you do that like 3, 4, 5 times, right? At a certain point, you're going to settle down in your mental, emotional stress and your body is going to be like, okay, can we play? Like, can we run? Can we lift? Can we do something here? Yeah. You know, can we go? Because you're not doing that thing where you're like, all right, you know, head down, white knuckle it. Let's pretend we're not anxious here. Like that is, it's unsustainable for the mind body system. So I just, you know, I use that as like a concrete example of what it might look like to balance the physical stress with the mental emotional stress is to just tell the truth about it, you know, and let it all exist. And so to exactly your point, that is sometimes, you know, if you're working out 5, 6 days a week, I've experienced this myself. That is, I see weight loss when I do less.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it's immediate stress relief. And it's really, it's the balance game with this.
One of the last things that I just want to touch on, and you might have no commentary for this, and I'm hoping it's not a dud, but one thing that I think about, this is totally a selfish question. I train in Olympic style weightlifting, and a buddy of mine, Peter, who was my coach 10 years ago, and we're still buddies. But I turn 36 next month, which puts me in a whole different, well, at 35, I'm in a totally different category for weightlifting, where now instead of competing against 17, 18, 20 year olds, 25 year olds that have more time, less responsibility, they can train their asses off. They, you know, all this stuff. Now I compete in that 35 to 40 year old, and I would have a legitimate shot right now at going and competing for a national title. However, I would have to then drop 2 or 3 pounds from what I am the majority of the time. In a weight class specific sport, taking into account the things that you are an expert in, which we're talking about mind, body, weight loss, that kind of stuff, what would you say to me with 2 or 3 pounds that I would have to lose by competition day and keep my strength numbers high? What's the advice? In a weight class specific sport, which is different than most people right. that want to drop 10 pounds or whatever.
Right, right. So I think, and I'm not sure if this is like exactly what you're asking me, but here's my first answer. That is, I really love this question because I'm not someone that is like anti weight loss. Like I don't, you know, I'm anti diet because those are not helpful and dangerous in their own right. But like I appreciate this because there is space for me to have a conversation around like, okay, you know, cool. I have this relationship with all of these things, but I also want to lose a couple pounds because of a goal. You know, I want to participate in this thing. I want to do this thing. And that really calls to me, you know, I'm passionate about it. It lights me up. Like, this is what I love and care about. Then, you know, great. Like, that's awesome. And if what you need to do in order to participate is lose 2 or 3 pounds, then the most important thing is that, you know, I think we have to understand, and I, you know, you do, that is, if you want something like 2 to 3 pound weight loss with keeping your strength up, what it's going to require is some sort of sacrifice or change. Like, you're going to have to do something in order to get that result. It's just cause and effect. And it's not about being in a better body. It's not about your worth or value as a human. It's just to say that if what you want is to get a few pounds off your body, something's going to have to happen in order to do that and make that happen. So I think I'm curious to kind of like, if there's a follow-up or a more specific question about it, but I think what tends to happen is that if someone has a goal of some sort of like any kind of weight loss, it becomes this conversation or debate in their head about like, is this okay? Is this right? And if it's for a goal, you know, if it's for a purpose, if you have a reason that is really aligned with you, then go for it. The problem is that we try to do something like weight loss without really being honest about the fact that it may require that you give up something that you're doing now. So like, let's just say, for example, the first thing that comes to me is like every week or so you have like a couple drinks, like you like a glass of wine or you like a beer or whatever, something like that, right? If we're looking at, I want to cut a couple of pounds off my body, well, then, you know, the law of cause and effect would suggest that something has to happen. If nothing changes, nothing changes. And so what I'm saying is, if you're okay with understanding what it will require from you to get that goal, to achieve what you want to achieve, that is, maybe you skip the alcohol for a few weeks, months, whatever it is. The most important thing is that you have that moment with yourself where you say, you know what, even though part of me does really want to have a beer, I really do want to stick to my goal, and I'm going to sacrifice that right now. I'm going to sacrifice the immediate gratification for the delayed gratification. And if you can, you know, do that in a way where you're not making it about you, you're not taking in, you know, it's not becoming a question of good, bad, right, wrong, but it's really a question of this is my goal and this is how I'm going to get there. Then you're on your own team. And that ultimately to me is the number one thing that matters about doing any of this stuff and having a sustainable result, is that you know why you're doing what you're doing. You're aligned with that. And it feels okay for you. You know, you're not neglecting and abandoning yourself in the process is, again, the most important part.
I knew that was the answer, but
Does that answer your question?
It does, because I know that's I know that's what it is. You're telling me I can't have a Moscow Mule on a Wednesday night, because that is my thing. But no, I have dieted down to weight classes before. Usually, it involves. So, if you were to say, Eddie, what is the thing in this on this earth that you hate more than anything else? And it could be a variety of things. It could be the Washington State Cougars. It could be like it could be a lot of different things. It is honest to goodness pulling out a food scale, measuring for any period of time, anything over one day. Yeah. And so I know that with, I mean, I could probably do it in 2 or 3 weeks with using a food scale, and even just, you know, I could do 2,300 calories a day or whatever, keep my carbs high, and I'll have plenty of energy to sustain and recover and all that stuff. So I know that's ultimately what it takes. And the way that I used to compete all the time, because I used to compete every single month. I did that for years. A lot of times I would have like a bigger competition every 3 or 4 months, and I would treat it like a 12-week, like a fight camp, like a UFC fighter would do, where I'm sort of watching the calories. And then as it gets closer, at one competition, I did waterlogging, which is a terrible idea, but I lost like 14 or 16 pounds in 5 days just on waterlogging. And that was by far the worst performance I've ever had, which is why, I don't recommend that, but I was pretty sure that you were going to say that. Okay. So we're getting to the end though. You've been such a gift. I would love to bring you back at some point to maybe talk about some other stuff, but this is the stuff that I geek out on. This is after 215 episodes. Like, this was the idea that I had in mind when I first started, was exactly what you're doing. So
yeah, it's incredible. Yeah.
So you do have, I just learned since we've started, so you've got a podcast. I need to give this, I love going on walks with my dog and listening to podcasts. So I need to give this a shout. Tell us about it.
Yes. So it's the Out of the Cave podcast with Lisa Schlossberg. We are, I think next week is episode 19. So it's still relatively new, especially compared to one as established as this one. So it's really just starting, but it's ultimately me sharing everything that I hope can be helpful to anyone who's struggling with their relationship with food. So it's a combination of solo episodes where I'm just talking about things that I think are important, some of the research about this. I also have a good amount about the ACE study in the first few. The first couple are my story. So if you're just getting into this and unfamiliar with, you know, what I've been through, I would start there. And then a bunch of client interviews so far, people that I've worked with directly, people that have gone through my group program. Nicole Sachs is the third episode. So other experts, you, Eddie, will be one as well. There's so just a combination of all the things really about healing our relationship with food from a trauma-informed mind-body approach.
Can confirm, by the way, this is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and it is also on Google Podcasts. So you should be covered regardless of the mobile device that you have.
Yes.
So you should be able to find it that way. Talked about a group program. Where can people find more about you? Is there stuff that people can do or go through or participate in, or talk about that?
Yeah. Great question. Thank you for asking. So there is the podcast. I also have, so my group program, I have my January cohort right now. It's a 14-week program. But the second one for the year is going to start in May. And I know this is going to be airing in March. So the early bird special has already begun for that. So if any of this is really resonating with you, please, please feel free to email me, reach out to me, lisa@lisaschlossberg.com. I will send that over to you, Eddie. And then there's also a monthly membership through my website. So that is 2 live calls a month every other Wednesday. It's a 2-hour call with me live, open coaching and Q&A style. So again, if any of this is resonating and you just want to jam in real time and ask me your questions in real time, you can feel free to join my membership. There's a bunch of resources in there just in terms of kind of getting started on the journey. And then Instagram, really Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, everywhere else, Lisa Schlossberg. That's me.
Awesome. Lisa, thanks for being here. Stay on the line after by do this fake outro, but but thanks for joining us. I'm sure you'll be back at some point. But yeah, thanks for being here.
Thank you.